The voices depicted in this program are of actors and not of the actual participants involved in the trial. Hi, I'm Lise Wheel, and this is episode 2 of the Cal Harris story, The First Trial. Last time on Wheel of Justice, the Cal Harris story, I told you about how Michelle and Cal Harris met and how by all appearances they had a picturesque family. A vibrant young blonde met a wealthy and powerful businessman. They married and had 4 beautiful kids, and they lived on an idyllic 250-acre estate. But as with most things, the reality for this couple was not quite that simple. Cal became angry and controlling. He had affairs, and he made threats. Michelle started working nights at a bar. She had affairs on her own, and some say she was involved in drugs. When Michelle disappeared on September 11, 2001, friends and family began frantically searching for clues about what happened to her. And investigators looked for answers. One obvious place to start looking for some indication about what had happened to Michelle was her home, the home she shared with Cal and the 4 kids. What investigators found was a small amount of blood spatter in the family home. And it was this blood that made Cal the prime suspect. After a lot of investigating, asking many questions, and searching, on September 30th, 2005, Cal Harris was indicted on 1 count of second-degree murder. From there, some legal drama ensued, like the first judge being asked to recuse himself, the new judge throwing out the first indictment, and a second indictment on February 26, 2007. Then on May 21, 2007, nearly 6 years after Michelle Harris disappeared, the Cal Harris trial began. Let's go to where both sides get to tell their side of the story, opening statements. A small town in New York State wondered for almost 6 years about what happened to Michelle Harris. There were a lot of unknowns. She disappeared without much of a trace, leaving behind an estranged husband and 4 kids. They ranged from age 2 to 7. And finally, at the historic Tioga County Courthouse, it seemed as though some answers might be close. Jurors were selected. They were seated for trial. Judge Martin Smith takes his seat. Cal Harris sits at the defense table, hoping to convince a jury that he didn't kill his wife. And lawyers for both sides are ready to present their case. First up is the prosecutor, Gerald Keene. And this is what he said. On September 11th of 2001,
when everyone in this country was focused on what had happened at the World Trade Center, at the Pentagon, and a field in western Pennsylvania. On that date, when all of us in the entire country were concerned about the state of our country and the state of our loved ones, Mr. Harris's main concern was how he was going to dispose of the body of his wife. Murder of Michelle Harris was Mr. Harris's way of ending a bitter divorce dispute that was going on. A bitter divorce proceeding that was going on between Mr. and Mrs. Harris. By killing Michelle Harris, Calvin Harris saved himself $740,000. But it wasn't just about money. His reason for killing Michelle Harris was not just about money. It was about control and controlling Mrs. Harris. By killing her, he gained control of his children, his property, his business, his money, and his wife.
Without wasting any time at all, Mr. Keene tells you what would motivate Cal to kill his wife, and that's control. Mr. Keene goes on to discuss Cal and Michelle's marriage, that Cal had an affair, that Michelle wanted a divorce and Cal didn't, that the financial pressure of the divorce became too much for Cal to handle, and he started to lash out. Mr. Keene pointed to 3 events that illustrate Cal's reaction to the pressure of a heated divorce. All right, let's go through them. The first is the call Cal made to Michelle while she was getting her haircut. She tipped her phone so the hairdresser, Jerome Wilczynski, could listen to how angry Cal was that she was going forward with the divorce. Here's what Mr. Wilczynski heard Cal say.
Drop the divorce proceeding. I will f***ing kill you. I can make you disappear.
The second event is when Michelle called her sister-in-law, Mary Jo Harris. Now, she called from a closet in her house. She told Mary Jo that Cal was downstairs and he was racking a shotgun. This is what Mary Jo said she heard that day. Quote, she was whispering in the phone. She sounded very afraid. And she said that Cal was downstairs and that he was opening and closing a chamber of a gun. That's scary stuff. And the third event is when Michelle took a call from Shannon Taylor, another sister-in-law, while Michelle and Cal are in the middle of a heated argument. This is what Shannon Taylor said she heard.
Get away from me!
Meanwhile, according to the record, Cal is yelling at Michelle. Here's what he's saying.
Get off the phone! Hang up the phone!
And he was preventing her from leaving the home. Now, all of these events, according to Mr. Keene, he's the prosecutor, just highlight Cal's anger and show a pattern of controlling behavior. That's what the prosecution wants to show. This behavior indicates that Cal Harris not only had the motive, that's important, to kill his wife, but that he actually did do it, even more important. Here's what the prosecutor said.
Mr. Harris says she never came home that night. We believe the evidence will show that she did come home that night, that she was killed in her home that night, and that Mr. Harris had 8 hours from September 11th, 2001, 11 o'clock, until the following morning at 7 o'clock to dispose of Mrs. Harris's body. In that 8-hour period, Mr. Harris has to dispose of her body. He had to move her van back from the garage out to the end of the driveway. And he had to clean up the blood that was left by the incident between Mr. Harris and Mrs. Harris.
But according to Mr. Keene, Cal failed to clean up all of the blood. On September 14th, 2001, blood is found at the Harris residence in the kitchen and the garage, and that blood belongs to Michelle Harris. Now, it's not a lot of blood, but it's very suspicious nonetheless. So at this point, we have an impression of Cal being threatening and overbearing. We hear that he likes control, and Michelle is causing him to lose a lot of that control. And we hear that she wouldn't do what he demanded, drop the divorce. He killed her and got rid of the body and most of the evidence. That's what we're hearing. Now, does this seem possible to you? I have some troubling questions. How is it that Cal Harris has hid her body and the weapon he would have used to kill her? Remember that estate I mentioned the Harris is living on? Well, that's a 250-acre estate with open fields and a pond. That seems like prime real estate to hide a body, right? So maybe it's possible that he's been able to hide her for all these years. But Mr. Keene explains that there have been foot searches, divers in the ponds and lakes, and they've gone over the property with helicopters and dogs, and they came up empty-handed. In other words, investigators have been thorough. So where is the body? What could Cal have done with the body? That's exactly what William Easton, one of Cal's attorneys, wants the jury to wonder.
The New York State Police focused on an area where Michelle and Cal Harris lived, where her minivan was about a quarter of a mile or so from the house. The New York State Police tried to find her using state-of-the-art equipment, thousands of man-hours, airplanes, helicopter searches, underwater cameras, infrared searches, disciplined grid searches, specifically trained canine units, global tracking devices on Mr. Harris's vehicles. They conducted extensive forensic examinations of Mr. Harris's house, forensic evaluation of Michelle's minivan, Cal Harris vehicles, and including taking them apart, inspecting the screw for traces of blood. And after this massive investigation, which lasted for years and years, the New York State Police did not find Michelle Harris.
This version of the story, the one pointed out by the defense, is that in order for Cal to have killed Michelle and leave hardly any evidence, he'd have to possess superhuman powers. Since this is unlikely, Mr. Easton says the more probable scenario is that
police focus almost exclusively on one person, the obvious suspect in this case. And maybe, just maybe, it was the wrong person.
Now, Cal's defense goes on to tell the jurors that they will be given a lot of distractions, like the divorce and the affairs. And they will be told and shown that Cal Harris may not have been the best husband, but that this is not enough to convict him of the murder of Michelle Harris. This is what Mr. Easton says.
Not being a good husband does not in any way equate to proof of murder.
And so the foundation for the trial has been laid. One side will try to convince the jurors that a compulsion to control a situation that was unraveling compelled a husband to kill his wife. The other side now is going to poke as many holes in that theory as possible, namely by pointing out that there is no clear evidence, despite all the years and effort, that says Cal killed Michelle. Which brings us to the first person Mr. Key, now he's the prosecutor, questions, Barbara Thayer. Barbara had known Michelle for 6 years and was a nanny and housekeeper for the Harrises. She described how her employment at the Harrises estate developed into a friendship between her and Michelle. She'd talk about how they'd ride horses, take the kids on picnics, go to jewelry parties together. This is what she said. I felt after a couple years almost like she was more like a daughter, Barbara said. And Ms. Thayer also said that where Michelle was concerned, the kids came first. There are hundreds of pages dedicated to Mr. Keene's questioning of Barbara, a lot of which doesn't seem all that groundbreaking. But there are a few things in all of this questioning that really struck me. Let's go through it. The first relates to Michelle's van. At 7 a.m. on September 12, 2001, Barbara gets a call from Cal, asking her to come over to help get the kids ready for school. Why? Because Michelle never came home. Barbara quickly gets dressed and drives the 3 or 4 miles from her house to the Harris estate. When she arrives at the end of the driveway, she notices that Michelle's van is parked there. Barbara gets out of her car to look in the van, thinking maybe Michelle has fallen asleep in there. She doesn't see Michelle, but she does notice that the keys are in the ignition. That's odd. So she then heads up to the house where she questions Cal about whether or not Michelle is home. She's not, and then tells him that the van is at the end of the driveway. He responds that they should go get it, so they do. The thing is, according to Barbara, there's no discussion about the fact that the keys are in the ignition, and Cal did not look for the keys before they drove down to the end of the driveway. Did he know they were there? How would Cal know that he didn't need the keys? One way to interpret this is that he knew that the keys were in the ignition, which means he likely had something to do with the van being at the end of the driveway. Or I suppose it could be as innocent as him being a little flustered. He's getting ready for work, he's got his 4 kids ready for the day, and his wife has not come home for the night before. Perhaps a detail like grabbing the keys was just not something to be concerned about. All right, the second detail I found interesting has to do with an island counter in the kitchen. According to Barbara, this island was typically an area where papers for school were kept and where mail and magazines were collected over the years. She came to expect that the island would be cluttered. But on the morning of September 12th, this island was cleaned off, all of the clutter gone. One of the kids made a comment about needing to stop at the store to buy new folders because Cal had thrown theirs away, Barbara recalls. Again, this could just be Cal being sick of the clutter, or it could be something more. As I've mentioned before, blood spatter was found in the kitchen. If you allow yourself to believe that Michelle was in fact killed in the kitchen, you'd have to also believe that there would be blood and a mess that needed to be cleaned up. This could be why Cal cleared off the island, to get rid of the clutter that might have a blood spatter on it. And the third thing that made me pause and wonder has to do with Michelle's things. Okay, why did Cal want nothing to do with Michelle's possessions? By Barbara's account, on September 20th, barely a week after Michelle went missing, Cal asked her to remove all of Michelle's possessions from the house, and pictures of Michelle were taken down. It's as though he's trying to erase even the memory of Michelle. Why would Cal want that? She's still the mother of his kids, and if he didn't kill her, he didn't know that she was dead. There's a possibility that she's coming back for her things, right? But then I put myself in his shoes. Maybe he didn't kill her, and he's hurt that she's up and left their family. So he wants any reminder of her out of the house. The prosecutor, Mr. Keene, is asking Barbara questions to make jurors wonder why Cal would behave this way. Why did he do this and not that? How did he know about certain things? It's with these questions in mind that Keene is hoping jurors start to question Cal Harris. And that's exactly where Joseph Colley, another lawyer in Cal's defense, comes in. If nothing else, Mr. Colley made me question Barbara's memory of what happened, often pointing out inconsistencies in her testimony at trial versus statements she made to police officers in the days right after Michelle disappeared. Mr. Colley also asked about a particular statement Barbara made to police officers on September 12, 2001.
Did you or did you not say that you thought she may be drunk, may have gotten drunk and slept in the back of the van?
Okay. To me, this indicates that Michelle got drunk often. Often enough that one of the first thoughts Barbara has upon seeing Michelle's van at the end of the driveway is that Michelle could have been drunk enough to sleep in the car. It's also made clear that not all of Michelle's items were removed from the house. In fact, some of her clothing remained. Barbara was not asked to remove family photo albums. And china that meant a lot to Michelle was not taken from the home. Barbara admits that she's nervous, that it's hard to remember things that happened 6 years ago, and that it's difficult to remember, quote, 50 million questions and everybody asking you everything. So what we're left with is questions that are still unanswered. There's really nothing conclusive here. There are some things that certainly make me wonder, mostly related to Cal's reaction to the news that his wife is missing. But is there really a correct reaction, one which would make it less likely that he murdered his wife? It's hard to say. On the next episode of Wheel of Justice, the Cal Harris story, we'll look at one of Michelle's boyfriends, who was one of the last people to admit seeing her alive. We'll also hear what blood experts concluded based on the blood spatter found in the Harris home. And I'll discuss the threatening call made to Michelle while she was with her hairdresser. Now, please don't forget, I need your help. Do you see something I don't? Do you have questions that I haven't asked? Do you want some clarification? If so, please let me know. You can do so by going on Facebook, Twitter, and using the hashtag Wheel of Justice. Now remember, it's my last name spelling, W-I-E-H-L, Wheel of Justice. And let's solve this mystery together. Till next time, it's Lise Wheel signing off.